Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, everyone. We do not yet have our host, Gail Kellner, in the room, but I'm Susan McCabe filling in for Truman O'Brien. And Bruce Hallman?
Yep.
Are you going to take over for us here?
Great. If you want. Good morning. That was the voice of our beloved friend, Brian Brown, instigator of the Brown Briefly. He would be so happy this week to know that our democracy took a big step away from the edge of oblivion last week with the election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as the presumptive next president and vice president. I wouldn't use the word presumptive. They are elect, president and vice president elect. I'm sure if Brian was still here with us, he would agree. Inauguration Day 2021 could not come too soon. Here at the Briefly this morning, we'd like to dedicate this song to him and the woman behind and sometimes ahead of him, Sheila Brown. That was the victory song from Star Wars after the defeat of the evil empire. So so I thought that would be appropriate for this morning. This morning we have the fabulous Susan McCabe at the soundboard filling in for Truman O'Brien, who is joining us this morning from the dentist chair.
I don't think he's going to get here from the dentist chair.
I don't think I would either.
We could hear him talking with his mouth full of cotton or something.
We also have with us Renaissance man and carpenter, half a bob shy of plum, Michael Shook. How are you this morning, Michael?
I'm doing pretty swell, thank you, Bruce. And I'm glad to see Gail is forging her way through the technological difficulties. I hope she'll be joining us soon. But yeah, it's a lovely day in the Northwest. Cold, cloudy, a little drizzle, some rain coming later in the day. So I'm happy.
Good. Also with us is political activist and election warrior Kevin Jones with Indivisible Vachon. So what is Indivisible Vachon doing this week besides celebrating?
Well, we are definitely celebrating. There's more yahoos and whoop calls that you might imagine. We're moving on to Georgia, which is one of our major focus, of course, and working to get that Senate to move bluer than it has been in the last 4 years. And also, let's make sure to let everybody we know that our election process ran like it always does. We cast the votes. We counted the votes. The president lost. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris will be our next president and vice president. It is important to let everybody know that that is what happened. Social media, email your friends. This is the path we're on. We're going to continue to work to make sure that the president doesn't do something aberrant regarding this process, but let everybody know this is where we're headed.
Right. We've got 73 days, so let's hope the house doesn't burn down before that. Also joining us by magic Zoom is transplanted Georgia peach and proud feminist Lynn Kerrigan. Welcome, Lynn.
Good morning. And I would add, I've been singing David Byrne's Talking Heads, Burning Down the House, the entire week. It's one of the most fun songs I know to belt out. And in particular, today, when I hear about Bill Barr and Fox News and all the crazies in the Trump administration trying to do anything and everything they can to delegitimize the presidency and start over with the vote counting and follow their eye to lawsuits. I think this is a sad day, but I don't think it can overturn the numbers no matter what they do. So, yeah.
Let's not blow it yet, right?
Can you guys hear me by chance?
We can hear you.
We can, Gail.
I can see you, but I can't, and I can hear you. And I think that, so I might just jump in. Have we introduced everyone? Thank you, Bruce.
We have, except for me.
Well, Guardian of the Galaxy and historian Bruce Holman. Thank you, Bruce, for stepping in. I was having some technical difficulties getting in this morning.
You're welcome. So you can start with the hot toddies.
Thank you. Well, first I wanted to, and maybe you said this, that song was, the song that we opened with this morning was dedicated to Brian Brown. Did you share that?
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. He would be so proud, I think, and so happy this morning, this week, with the outcome of the election. And so I just shout out to him, Brian, and I'm looking up when I say it.
He was searching high and low. I know Sheila told me in those last weeks of his life, trying as hard as he could to find a way. Was there any way he could get an early ballot and vote? It meant so much to him. And of course, his passing when he did, it was just not going to be a feasible thing. But I thought that was great. One of his last acts would be to sign that ballot and send it off.
A contribution to decency, yes.
Thank goodness he didn't live in Pennsylvania. According to Trump, he would have voted, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, Hot Toddies and Frangelico got me in my morning tea, helped me get through this last week's election. How did you all cope with the anticipation, anxiety, and eventual relief?
My goodness. I went outside and raked a million leaves and turned the TV off after the initial counts were ordered and until I could get back to some of the ones that were hanging by a thread. I'd come in and watch at the end of the day. I couldn't stand it all day.
Anybody else? Go ahead. Kevin?
Well, my strategy was a couple of things came up. One is that Fox News called Arizona early. And if we've been tracking the states, and we know that Michigan and Wisconsin and Arizona are one clear path to a Biden victory. So I was super excited about that. And then not at all surprised that the Trump administration pushed back pretty hard on Fox News for doing that. Then I resorted to creating a spreadsheet, surprise, surprise, to keep track of the trend of votes as they were coming in from Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania, just to see, given the remaining votes, how many did Biden need, right, to keep ahead? And the trend lines were looking good everywhere except North Carolina. So that's what we see today. And I'm expecting a high confidence that eventually even Trump will come around to figuring that out.
How about you, Michael?
I did what I have always done my whole life under any kind of stress or depression, which is go outside. I went outside and tended the plants and continued to organize my new garden shed, and it helps keep things at bay that way, the physical activity. And while in the background, of course, lurks the anxiety over things. But as you said, Kevin, Cynthia would read things to me that, you know, Arizona's going this way. And so that sort of helped keep it at bay as well. And then, yeah, then, and usually when I was doing that, especially the stuff that didn't need a whole lot of brain power, I would be singing something too.
We may want to employ all of these techniques in the coming
You can't beat them.
Couple months. Oh, that's why I asked. Susan, I'm going to ask you in a minute, but let me hear from Bruce. How did you manage the stress, strain, and eventual victory?
Oh, just like most of you, watch MSNBC and CNN and just amazed at the map work they were doing county by county and looking at the trend lines. And I mean, it's very fascinating how sort of scientific and how quantitative this election sort of processing has become. And it was just, you know, actually Tuesday night I went to bed, Pam and I went to bed, and we were both sort of like, oh my God, it's 2016 all over again. And then woke up Wednesday morning and it's sort of like, whoa, things have changed. And the trend, like Kevin was saying, the trend lines were just indisputable of, you know, Biden was going to take Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada. You know, it just became apparent that Trump didn't have an avenue to victory. And so that, you know, so it sort of buoyed us up for the rest of the week. And then sort of the amazement, we just sort of shake our heads and look at each other when Trump and his minions and Rudy Giuliani and his little thing at the Four Seasons between the porn shop and the crematorium, trying to say that this.
We need to hear that story.
All that sort of stuff, and it's just sort of like, wait a minute, guys. You know, I think we on Vashon and here in Washington State, we're used to mail-in elections. We're used to results coming in over days after the actual election, but you know, to imply that election workers and election managers, state attorney generals and state secretaries of state around the country, both Republican and Democrat, are corrupt is just inexcusable. Yeah. I mean, that alone is sort of a reason to impeach a president.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Susan, how about you? How did you celebrate?
You know, it took me a while to actually allow myself to get past the cautious part of my optimism. Enough to say woohoo. I mean, after from Tuesday through Friday, I think I was holding my breath, and I was glued to every medium I could because I am a junkie. And I realized when the results came in that I had to cry. I just had to let it go. I had this feeling inside me that said, I want my mommy. And then, of course, when we watched Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's speeches, that was so moving and so wonderful. And it was at that point that I was able to breathe.
Yeah.
So coping, I didn't.
You don't mind just a few numbers to just let everybody know where we're at. Currently in the popular vote, Biden leads Trump by over 4.6 million votes. In Arizona, his lead is still over 14,000 votes. In Georgia, his lead is continuing to grow over 12,000 votes. In Nevada, his lead continues to grow 36,000 plus votes. And in Pennsylvania, his lead continues to grow over 47,000 votes. There's a few hundred thousand votes there that clearly say in those key states that that Biden is walking away from Trump.
Lovely. Bruce, you were going to add something there.
Oh, I was just, it's just thinking in terms of, you know, how just spot on Biden's and Kamala's speeches were the other night. You know, I mean, it just, Biden is, I think, what we need right now. He's a candidate, he's a president-elect who's all about sort of us as a people, not about him as an individual. And if you listen to his speech carefully and to Kamala's speech, both of them, it was not about them, it was about us. It was about us coming together. I mean, that there's no red states, there's no blue states, there's just the United States. That's the kind of message I think people need, and that's the kind of thing that will help heal the divisions. Because, I mean, Trump got more votes than anybody else for president except Joe Biden. So you got to remember, you know, there's 70 million Americans who wanted Trump for whatever reason. And we need to figure out what those reasons are and address them.
Mm-hmm. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bruce. And as I was watching Joe Biden, I thought, this is a man who has spent his life coming to this point, and he is absolutely the right person. He's got nothing to lose. This is the end of his political career. He's got nothing to lose by doing the right thing, by reestablishing the United States position on the world stage, by working for racial justice and climate action, all the right things. All he needs is a Congress that will support him.
Right. You know, one of the ways that I took a deep breath and turned on Fox News early on Tuesday, and what I saw shocked and amazed me, and that was that they were preparing their listeners for a loss. And I think that I never thought I would be giving a shout out to Fox News, but they genuinely framed the election for their many, many listeners and followers as a game, and they explained it like a game, and they prepared them that it was going to look like Trump was going to be ahead, and then he wasn't going to, that it was likely that the other team, almost as they were talking about it, would pull ahead in the end. And then again with their early call in Arizona, as well as I understand, though I didn't see this, they turned off the mic. They in some way shortened an interview with him recently because it was full of disinformation. So, but strange times we're living in. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, just that was at first a little shocking to me, and then I thought, this is no surprise. This is called the rats jumping ship. I imagine Mitch McConnell and any number, you know, the Rupert Murdoch and so many of these other folks who've been either silent or aiding and abetting Trump's lunacy. I imagine someone walking in and say, the president would like to speak with you. And they go, oh, President-elect Biden? And they say, no, President Trump. And the response is, who's he? he was a useful idiot. And now he's out the door. So it's like, I don't know the guy.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Let me suggest, I don't think he's out the door. He's here for 72 more days. In the presidency, he's already started the purge with Espar yesterday, and we're going to see more and more of that, and we're going to see sort of a gutting of the government, and, you know, Fauci and others are on, their heads are on the block, if you will, and after he leaves office, I mean, Trump is going to be the darling of talk radio and other sort of right-wing, you know, media outlets. Trump is not going to go away, and Trumpism is not going to go away. You know, 70 million Americans voted for him and loved his message more than they loved Biden's message. And we ignore that at our peril, because if we can't bring those 70 million Americans back into the union, we're going to have, if not a fighting civil war, we're going to have a cultural civil war that lasts for a generation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kevin, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I completely agree with the concern that Bruce is raising. The the Republicans are now struggling to figure out who's going to actually talk to Donald J. Trump and let him know that he needs to honor our democratic process and step down. But meanwhile, there's a lot of money to be made in media to those 70 million people, and he will clearly not turn away from that opportunity. It's not clear how many people observing this will use, the deep-seated understanding of our democracy to say, you know, we voted, we counted, and a winner is clear. And how many of those folks will now say, you know, the former president, while I supported him, he's clearly now demonstrating he's not the person who really should be in this office. He doesn't have the integrity to stand up and honor the systems that we have in our country. I don't know how many folks will be swayed by that. I do hope that Biden and Harris can deliver really clear benefits to portions of our society that are really struggling. Put behind COVID, more progress on healthcare, get that economy building back better, as they say, going towards a green energy and a renewable energy economy. I think those are tremendous opportunities. I think Biden and Harris have 18 months to deliver, and then we're going to go to Georgia in 2022, the next round of elections in 2022 and see what happens in the U.S. Senate at that point.
Lynn, you have some
kind of back up just a little bit. You know, I just want to sort of say I'm a little bit concerned about the pressure that's going to be brought to bear on the state electoral offices. You know, when you listen to William Barr willing to mount a full defense of recounts and of allegations of fraud, when you hear, you know, Lindsey Graham, all these, you know, leaders in the Senate really trying to pat Trump on the head and say they're there, you know, we will indeed go back and look at all of the counts in all of the states. I just hope that the state's electoral systems, which, gosh, look to me pretty fair and transparent with cameras in every room all the time. You know, I don't know how long these baseless claims of fraud and deceit will stand, but I know it's a lot of pressure on the electoral offices.
Bruce.
Yeah, let me jump in. I mean, if you read Barr's statement, I mean, it's a very lawyerly written statement. I mean, he's not really Rudy Giuliani, you know, he's not Lindsey Graham. I mean, he's saying, let's look at the votes, but it's couched in terms of legal votes and legal processes. And what we're seeing essentially in 2020 is the legacy of the 2000 election and the debacle in Florida. And so what you've seen is election officials around the country have taken that lesson from 2000 to heart, and you have very transparent processes in every state. And so I'm not too worried. I mean, yeah, the rhetoric is there, but the reality is not. And the rhetoric will sort of fade away pretty quickly. And Barr has sort of unleashed the federal prosecutors, but in very limited ways and in ways that only look at if there's real cases of illegitimate voting. And there aren't. And so it's kind of a Donald, I'm doing your bidding, but you know, to the guys in the field, don't go overboard. That's the way I read his statement. Kevin,
yeah.
Yeah, and I also agree with Bruce, your point, and Lynn's point. The thing that the Protect the Results Coalition, which is a national organization now formed, for the very purpose to basically raise voices against the risks that Lynn just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And in Washington state here, right, we have high confidence. We've voted by mail for years and years and years. We know that we're not a battleground state. We don't suffer these pressures that Lynn described, but others do. And it's like, what do we do from here? And I think the first thing we do is recognize that groups like that are in Washington state are replicated across the entire country. Groups have signed on to pledge to protect the results. The votes have now been counted. The numbers are there, right? Now it's a huge thing to turn those numbers around. And every one of those state groups, Lynn, that you mentioned, right? This is the fruit of their labors. This is why they're hired. This is what they get paid to do, is process and count those votes. Their integrity is on the line too. And while they might have some tremendous pressure, hopefully none of them buckle. But if they do, we have other groups on the ground in those states who are going to rise up and say, no, you need to hold the line here. You know, we saw what happened. We need to press forward. So that's the hope that I have that will happen in the country.
Go ahead, Michael.
That's really well said, Kevin. And gosh, you know, congratulations and many, many thanks to you and to the people who are organizing these things or who have organized them. I mean, that's to me represents the, you know, the best of a truly grassroots kind of democracy. So that's fabulous. There's a couple of things, and I don't know, Bruce, maybe you or Kevin, you guys are much more wonks than I am when it comes to political ins and outs and stuff. Does Trump hope to sow enough chaos that in the final days before inauguration comes up, or the final days before these things have to be codified, is he hoping somehow to get to the Supreme Court? And then the other thing I wonder about is what is he just firing people out of spite? What does he hope to do by having a new Secretary of Defense or a new Secretary of this or that? I don't get that. Time is running out. Is he just hoping to make cash deals with people or what? Does anybody?
I just have to interject. I know you ask a serious question for which I will defer in 1 second, but it just makes me think of his tendency to project. And he's been fired, and so now he's going to fire people.
Awesome.
It is spite. I think it's spite and complete unhealthiness. So now, please, go ahead and answer.
Well, I have an opinion that, Trump is trying to get to the Supreme Court. He's certainly broadcast that. The path I see has to go through the legal system. And most of those legal challenges right now are not being paid attention to. Whether he can leapfrog to the Supreme Court from there, I think is a stretch. And it's hard for me to imagine that the justices, even though three of them were appointed by Trump, they have their jobs now, right? I think that they have to owe allegiance to the country and not to the person who essentially hired them.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's going on is he's trying to create enough uncertainty and chaos at the state level, because essentially, remember that the way the process works is once these elections votes are tabulated and certified by the states, and I think it's by December, 8th or something like that, they need to be certified, and then it goes to the Electoral College. The gap there is that the Electoral College electors are essentially chosen by state legislatures. So if there's enough uncertainty in enough states, the legislatures can set aside the vote of the people and say it was corrupted and choose a set of electors who would support Trump. Now, there'd be chaos and fights and court battles and all that within the states, but I think that's the only strategy, that and the Supreme Court strategy, which I think is a dead end. That's the only strategy that the Trump people have in terms of getting Trump to actually win the election in the Electoral College. And it's a long shot, but it's also something, and Kevin, you can speak to this about what's going on in individual states with Protect the Vote, but it's not just protecting the vote of this election, it's protecting the selection of electors who then go to the Electoral College who cast exactly the votes that actually elect the president. That's the rub, as you would go.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, completely. As Bruce points out, there's a number of steps between now and Inauguration Day, and every one of those steps has its own unique set of risks associated with it. Substantiating the vote and validating the vote is really a critical step here, because that is the foundation, the historic foundation of how the electors are picked. And those electors go to the Electoral College and cast their votes for either presidential candidate. And clearly, we want that vote to reflect the popular vote in that particular state. The other thought that came to mind as we're talking, and I have no idea, I've not heard this before, I don't know to what extent this might motivate the strategy, if we can call it that, is that we still have Georgia. Trump tried to basically call the elections fraudulent starting months ago. they still have a vested interest in calling elections fraudulent so they can protect and potentially fight these same election results that are going to happen on January 5th coming in from Georgia. So my guess is it's still just the same playbook, but they realize the game's not over and they need to keep playing out of the playbook until Georgia and January 5th is over.
Lynn, with your roots in Georgia, I think it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts about conservative Georgia voters, as well as the apparent emerging progressive vote there.
Well, you know, recognize that my experience in Georgia is now 50 years old. And so I have some deep background and feelings about Georgia, but have been watching that race pretty closely. And I know what you're talking about, Kevin, when you're talking about two Senate seats are hanging in the balance there, not just the vote for the presidency. Kelly Loeffler and one of the Purdues, and that brother or cousin is the governor in Georgia, have a pretty lockstep view on what they want to happen there. But I'll tell you, I had a chance to see Stacey Abrams talk, who was kind of in a contested vote, a contested election with Kemp, who was the governor at the point she lost that race under questionable circumstances, I'd say. But I heard her talking about the very careful getting out the vote, getting people registered to vote, that has happened since she lost that election. She kind of did a major run with her compadres in the Democratic National Committee there for Georgia. I also heard Nikita, I want to say Williams, she's now the congressman that took John Lewis's seat. And she's a Black woman who was part of the Democratic committee, I guess that would be the state Democratic committee. So both of them talked about the serious, hard, long work to shift Georgia to being a bluer state, purple if not blue, over the last 4 years. And, you know, my old 50-year-old experience mind was just blown away when I watched the Georgia counties go. You know, I expected Fulton County and Atlanta proper to go, but when I watched the outlying metropolitan area counties turn blue, which had always been red, and then I watched Columbus down in Fort Benning area in sort of southwest Georgia, also a college town, and then you watch Augusta, which does have a military base, my first thought was they've lost the military in these voting schemes. And Savannah, you know, went. And so all I can say is somebody down there has done a spectacular job in getting Blacks registered to vote and in overcoming decades, hundreds of years of voter suppression in Georgia to get that vote out, to be more representative of the population there. I was so proud of them.
We're getting, go ahead, Kevin, and then we're going to get near the end of the show and talk a little bit about what we voted for. What, you know, I want to really want to end on a big positive note here, because we should be taking a victory laps, many, many victory laps right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, Georgia, if people will go to indivisiblevashon.org website, click on the, at the very top, how to support Georgia. There's opportunities, groups to donate to, texting, phone banking, postcard writing. Over 2,000 postcard addresses have now been distributed to the writers on Vashon since November 3rd. And the writers are gearing up to do what they always do. You mentioned, Lynn, Stacey Abrams. Fair Fight is her group. There's a link for donations to Fair Fight. Indivisible Vashon has prioritized our donations to Fair Fight. creating equity in the state of Georgia, access to the polls, motivating people to see what can be true for their state, the folks who've been oppressed and subjected to a lack of access to the ballot box for so long, is now changing. And this is our opportunity to continue the momentum in that direction. So take a look, and hopefully people will be generous and help us move Georgia to a new future.
Thank you for that, Kevin. Michael, will you start us off? What did you vote for in this election? Not who, but what?
Not who. The concept of self-governance, that it's a responsibility we have to elect a functioning adult to lead us, to people who, recognizing that massive egos are always involved in politics. That's why people are in politics, is one of the reasons, but that those egos can be subordinated and sublimated into working for the local community, the county, the state government, and right on up through the national offices. People, I voted for the rule of law, I think, if I was to it up in one thing. I wanted to vote for the rule of law.
Lynn, how about you?
Truth.
What's that?
Truth.
Truth.
I just want to hear the truth spoken to the American people by our leaders. Yes, I support the rule of law, Michael. Absolutely. That was my background, but just truth.
Right. Kevin.
Equity and honesty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Susan.
I voted for all those things and for climate action, for the United States rejoining the rest of the globe to save the planet. I voted for racial justice, for criminal justice reform. And yes, the truth, the truth. The truth.
Thank you. Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, all those things, but my vote was really for the continuation. If you remember the 2008 election and the Obama-Biden poster that said hope, that's really what we're voting for. A continuation of what we started in 2008, which was truncated and turned to the dark side in 2016. And if you go back to the song that began this thing, the Victory March, it's possible to defeat the evil empire and to move forward with hope. So that's what I voted for.
Well, on election day morning, on last Tuesday, I was inspired by Alfred Lamotte's poem about election day. And I wrote this. I voted for the future, and not only of America. I voted for decency and truth. I voted for beds instead of doorways. I voted for the rich to pay their taxes. I voted for the winged ones who know no such things as borders or states. I voted for education and civil discourse. I voted for those who voted for him. I voted for ladybugs and dragonflies on long summer evenings. I voted for those too young to vote, too young to know what's at stake. Well, go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, if I can take us back to the local for just the last minute or so.
Yes, we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about local politics.
The final results won't be available until, whoops, I have grandkids here, so the final results won't be available till November 25th, but election night results are available from the King County website. And what's interesting on Vashon, there's 8,583 registered voters on Vashon. 78.2% voted. That means 22% didn't vote. So that's an issue we need to deal with. Out of those who voted, 87.4% voted for Biden. But 10.8% voted for Trump and 1.8% voted for third parties, sort of split between libertarians and right-wing parties and socialist and green sort of left-wing parties. But, you know, when you look at that, 13% of Vashon who voted didn't vote for Biden, and 20% didn't vote. When you put that together, you know, that's 33% of Vashon didn't vote for Biden. And Vashon is what the Seattle Times calls ultra-liberal Vashon. You know, so, I mean, what we have to confront and what Biden has to confront and what we as the American people need to deal with is the fact that we're a divided nation. And we're divided over ideological grounds that we need to find a common base. And that's why Biden's speech the other day was just so, so moving to me, because it really was about bringing everybody together. I think the left, if you will, or the center left is ready to come together. I don't know if the center right and the far right is ready to come together yet.
Well, I like to remember in all of this that prior to the election of 2016 and the months leading up to it, where Trump took such control of the media and our attention, although we were a divided country in some ways, not nearly as divided as we, you know, have felt in the last 4 years. He has taken and, you know, driven a wedge in that crack and opened it wide up. And so it gives me hope that perhaps we have more in common than not. So we have 1 minute left. Kevin, would you like to have the last word?
I'll just say in Washington state legislative races, we are currently at par. No seats flipped on net. We had huge gains last election, so we've been basically retained that on the progressive side. We have two Black women who will move into office, Twyna Nobles in the just south of Tacoma in the 28th, and Alicia Rule in the 42nd, which is up around Bellingham. The one area that we move from blue to red is in the 19th, which lies between Aberdeen and Vancouver in the southwest corner of the state. Other than that, our state elected officials, governor, lieutenant governor, are all favoring the Democrats, except for Secretary of State Kim Wyman, who retains her seat.
The lone Republican in the nation, I believe.
What you said, Kevin, earlier about in Georgia and now this election here with these Twyna Nobles and all, giving people someone to vote for.
Yep.
That's just fabulous.
Yes.
I think that's going to draw more people in if they feel like I'm represented too.
All right.
Folks,
thank
we
you
have
well.
Run out of time, and here's that song one more time.
Thank you.